Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the A10 Talk podcast. As usual, I'm Sam Basil, and today I am joined by Kaylee Godek, Sean Vitalis, and Isaac Harris. Guys, another great week of Atlantic 10 basketball on both the men's and women's side. We got a lot to talk about. First, I wanted to start off with the Monday AP Top 25 poll that came out. I'm sure as a lot of people who are listening to this podcast saw, the Dayton Flyers are ranked 21st in the country. They have won 11 in a row. They are undefeated in conference play. KenPom has them projected to go 15-3. That's their, you know, conference record projection. But if you look at all of their actual game by game projections, they could not figure out a single game in which the Flyers can drop to another A10 conference opponent. Sean, I know while we're getting ready for this podcast, you're feeling pretty good. Can you talk me through this 11-game win streak that these Flyers are on right now? And in your opinion, is there anything that can stop them from getting it up to 15, maybe even 20 consecutive wins for the Dayton Flyers?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to kind of recap the history of, I mean, our season so far, honestly, one that didn't get off to the best of starts. I mean, at one point we were sitting at 3-2, took those two losses early. And I think that's been the key part of the scheduling, possibly, from the AD here at Dayton, is we scheduled some tough games early on. You know, obviously we opened to Southern Illinois, Edwardsville. I mean, everybody's kind of got that easy first game to set the tone, get everybody, you know, more of a tune-up game. But then went on the road at Northwestern, on the road at LSU, played St. John's, and then Houston, who's been in that top five, currently sixth, but at the time they were number two, I believe. I mean, that was in there. Northwestern and Houston were those two losses, one against Southern Illinois, Edwardsville, LSU, and St. John's. The St. John's one, definitely a confidence booster, and LSU's gotten some big wins of late to possibly get that to a Q1 win for Dayton. since then, I mean, had some pretty solid games. One at SMU on the road, that was a big one. Took down Cincinnati. That was big as far as more of a proximity rivalry than anything. And then kind of had a few easy games and then hopped into conference play as we rounded out the new year and won at Davidson. Good win on the road. Took down UMass at home. That was a really, really close game, but we got the job done. And then on the road at Duquesne, that one really interesting from my perspective because that was – We had 9 in a row, or excuse me, that we had 10 in a row after UMass. Went on the road to Duquesne, winning double digits in a row, and Duquesne was the favorite by a point, which that, you know, really interested me. Dayton won 72-62, so obviously covered by winning, but also a double-digit win at that. And then took down St. Louis, which was another pretty chippy game. That was the Chapel Blue game here at UD. 70-65 victory for the Flyers. So, you know, I think that the very interesting thing for the Flyers, I sent out a tweet earlier in the week responding to another Dayton fan, and possibly he's a UD alum, not sure, but saying that I think the difference from the Dayton team a year ago to now is that we're getting judged on how much we're winning by. And it's not necessarily like, did they win? It's like in the UMass game, in the St. Louis game, like after the St. Louis win, we only won by 5 points and SLU's at the bottom of the table for the A-10 this year. And so, you know, we dropped in the KenPom and some of the other rankings because it's like, you know, we didn't win by enough. And so I think that's a really good spot to be in. I mean, I think any team where it's like, not only are you winning, but like, oh, you didn't win by as many points as we needed you to, you're going to be lower in our ranking system. I think that means that you're in some elite company and for sure looking like a tournament team. Tomorrow, though, 12:30 game against Rhode Island, Archie Miller's first trip back to UD Arena since he left for Indiana. So I'm Indianapolis native. Very exciting when Archie came to the Hoosier Heartland and was not that great of a stint at IU, and then interesting to find himself back in the A-10 and trying to turn around that roadie program.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, Rhodey off to a pretty solid start in conference play. They won their first three games against St. Joe's, Davidson, and UMass, respectively. But then this is going to kind of get into the next thing I wanted to talk about. On Wednesday, they were handed a pretty big loss to St. Bonaventure in Olean, 99 to 64, a 35-point loss to the St. Bonaventure Bonnies. And that kind of gets into my next point because on that same night, Davidson. They headed over to the Rose Hill Gym and they beat the Fordham Rams by 10 points to get their first conference win of the season. So there's kind of been this talk. I know we kind of talked about it last week how Dayton is in a bit of a league of their own right now in terms of the Atlantic 10. And while I don't think 2 through 15 is, I wouldn't say that it is completely level. I mean, I think there's a lot of teams that are there. There are some decent tiers in this conference. I think there's a lot of parity between 2 through 15. So, Isaac, this is, I think, your first pod of the season with us. So, welcome. And I just kind of want to get your thoughts on, based on some of the games that you saw this week, who do you think could come out of, maybe this weekend? We got some really good games. Come out of this weekend with, maybe a renewed perspective on where their season is heading.
Thanks, Sam, and thanks everybody. To me, honestly, I don't see it as like a wide gap for, and excuse me, Sean, for Dayton. It's like, oh, it's Dayton versus everybody. That's just my first noticing. I feel like the conference is a little more wide open as conference play goes in, especially with the KenPom rankings, and I feel like some of the records don't really show the whole depth of the team. That if there were, let's say, we put, Duquesne, despite their and St. Joe's, despite a shaky conference outing the first couple games, they would be in first place in like a smaller conference. So it just kind of shows how deep this year the conference is. And I think one of those teams, in my opinion, other than George Mason, my own team, St. Joe's is sneaky. St. Joe's is sneaky, and they showed that in the non-conference play at they showed that during non-conference, despite what their conference record shows right now. Just, I'm gonna go with St. Joe's, Duquesne, and then also UMass. Looking at those three, I think their record doesn't really show the define on what how they're playing. They had some great signature wins in conference play. Rough start in conference play, but good non-conference showing for the most part, especially St. Joe's. So I think those three are, I'm looking for them to turn it around, along additionally to George Mason as well. Rough outing for the Patriots as well. Going, it's kind of hard when you have to start the first half of your conference with your regional rivals and with starting out with GW and VCU and then also Richmond. So it's very, I think the conference is deeper than what KenPom, the net rankings are showing. So I'm not just sold on the top two just yet. I think we got to really go down to the wire up until like the last weekend of the conference play.
You bring up a really interesting point in calling St. Joe's sneaky, because I think it highlights something that I've seen a lot in the Atlantic 10. I've seen it a lot in college basketball in general, but I've seen it a lot in the Atlantic 10, especially this year, where heading your record heading into conference play, just based off your non-conference, is not really a good indicator of where you're at. And then on top of that, your start to conference play is also, it's not always a strong indicator of your quality as a team and where you fit in this conference. Because, obviously, teams build their schedules in the non-conference in a lot of different ways. You've got teams that are, seeking out national games, they're going to MTEs, and then you have teams that are just trying to build, a strong, home record. So do you feel like the A-10 is kind of a good example of that? Do you feel like what do you think about the transition from non-conference play to conference play that can kind of shake teams up and either cause them to take a little, a quick dip upwards or a quick dip downwards?
In my opinion, the A-10's in a weird is a weird conference because they're a mid-major conference, but they have mid-major like top-tier mid-major programs. So a lot of the teams, based off in my perspective, when I was a manager at West Virginia, this is what I learned about how scheduling goes. Usually the Power Five tried to schedule either, depending on how their team looks, how easy it looked, just the best confidence builder, because you get the young team, or a resume builder. The A-10 is like in a mixture of both. We need a resume builder and a confidence builder. So when you schedule games like, you know, St. Joe's versus Villanova, or, you know, Dayton versus Cincinnati, those regional games, those regional big games, or, you know, occasionally the George Masons versus the UVAs, or, you know, any of the Big Five or Big Six games, it's like, okay, it's a confidence builder, but also like, hey, this could move us up a little bit, or doing any of the Christmas tournaments. So the A-10 right now, this year, based off the strength of scheduling, it was more of like, okay, a lot of the teams are young. We got a lot of new coaches, a lot of new turnover teams. Let's see what we got, and let's build off of that. And hopefully maybe the net and Kempom will be nice to us this year. And that's not saying negative, but it's just how kind of, it's just kind of how the chips kind of fell with some of the non-conference play. So it does help, especially, and it does help going into conference play, especially, you know, you see teams like Duquesne that was playing earlier, amazing year, but they're struggling in during their first opening. Same with like St. Joe's. So it's very interesting to see how, like, okay, you know, it's more of a learning step for that. So the A-10's in a weird mix, if that makes sense to anybody. You know, it's interesting to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And KG, any thoughts on, there was a really, I kind of wanted to bring up a quote that I got in the post game for Fordham Davidson that I think really epitomizes like a lot of teams' mentalities at this point in the season. Obviously that was this one against Fordham was their first win in conference play. And something you hear a lot from coaches and players, you know, when they're on a win streak or a losing streak and something shifts, right? They don't like to talk about, you know, a single game in relation to the entire season, right? Matt, as Matt McKillop explained, you know, he wants to avoid the idea of a must win game. That being said, he was pretty candid in saying that, well, we want to avoid the idea of a must win game because you're kind of putting your back against the wall. Getting that win against Fordham, especially after losing a lot of their first couple A-10 games, you know, within single digits, it felt good. It was, there is a sort of like catharsis to it, right? So, KG, I mean, how do you feel like, you know, this season has transpired so far for UMass? Do you feel like they've kind of gotten those, you know, do they feel like, you know, they've gotten a couple of those shaky wins? Do you feel like they have some must-win opportunities on the horizon? Or what do you think their, you know, upcoming schedule looks like for them?
So for UMass, I'm going to say this. Their Dayton loss really wasn't a bad loss. Sean was there in person for that. That was probably one of the better losses they've had all season. And it did come down to missing three throws. But out of all of their games, I haven't had a chance to go back and watch Rohde film because, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch that one, and I kind of got bashed a little bit after my comments about the UMass URI game last weekend. It is what it is, but Rohde is starting to feel like they're a little more legit, but I just need more evidence for that. That's all I'm going to say. I know we're going to talk about Rohde a little bit later on, but as far as UMass, all of their losses on the season, which is now six, five of their six losses have came down to them making three throws. Their one loss that did not, well, maybe not necessarily Rhode Island, because I didn't look at the box score for that one either. But at least four of their losses came within like 3 points or less, or maybe even 4 points actually. And it came down to making three throws or making threes. All of those could have been like stayed away from those losses. And honestly, we could be looking at a whole different UMass team too, based off of it. That Loyola Chicago game on Wednesday, that one just, I was in the Mullen Center watching the UMass woman play Loyola Chicago, and had the men's one on simultaneously on my computer. That game was insane for the men. Second game without Matt Cross. Matt Cross did not even travel with the team from what Martin said in the post game presser. With that, to Cross just had dental surgery for the tooth he chipped against Dayton on the Deron Holmes dunk. I can see Sean smiling a little bit with it. But I think the part of not having Cross available has definitely shown, especially since we've had Tyler Mason, who joined the team back in December, start to step up and see some minutes. But it definitely shows that Tyler Mason does not have confidence, and he just needs to be with the team more in order to get some more confidence, is what it feels like. In the meantime, Josh Cohen and Jalen Curry have both stepped up dramatically and helped this UMass team a lot. Cohen was only 2 rebounds away from having a 3rd consecutive double-double, but tied a season high of 28 points, 8 rebounds against Loyola Chicago, only missed playing 3 minutes of the entirety of the game. Jalen Curry posted a career high 18 points against the Ramblers, as well as now having in conference play a 13.5 points per game average. So honestly, I know we talked about this last time with players that could possibly be running for an all rookie team and all of that. Jalen Curry, just with the past few games he's had, has definitely been putting up more for him in a resume for possibly even rookie player of the week this upcoming week. So honestly, this UMass team, as long as we get Cross back, we should be fine. It's just having that big missing piece of not having Cross available has done a number on UMass. And I think he's possibly a game time decision for tomorrow's game against George Washington, but I don't entirely know yet. We don't have a new timeline on when he could be back.
You mentioned confidence as an important part of, you know, getting this UMass roster kind of going here. Their upcoming slate, you got George Washington tomorrow, and then you've got St. Louis, Mason, Bonaventure. Those are their next 4 games in conference.
And St. Joe's.
And then St. Joe's. Kind of an interesting schedule, like what we've been saying. You know, obviously GW is kind of in that interesting second tier that we talked about last week, where there's a lot of teams that have just, you know, they either just got their first loss or they've been kind of sustaining one loss in conference play for a while. And then you've got obviously St. Joe's and St. Louis, St. Joe's, an impressive non-conference slate, but they've kind of gotten off to a tough start. How can UMass kind of take advantage of that and, you know, and get some wins, get a couple more wins here and get over 500 in conference play?
UMass needs to remain injury free. That means they need to keep, they need to get Cross back to almost 100%. They need Cohen to stay healthy. They need to keep their point guards healthy. They can't have a repeat of last year of having Noah Fernandes come back, not 100%, end up re-injuring his ankle and then being out for the rest of the season, then barely going 500 on the season, going below 500 in conference play. They need to be able to find ways to win without Cross, even if that means like trying to rotate players in and out. But with how Jalen Curry has performed, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him become a huge 6-man off the bench for the Minutemen, especially since he's been like a huge like provider of points and has improved vastly since the start of the season, really. And honestly, UMass just really needs to find ways to win the winnable games. This is something I've said a lot in our women's podcast special, and I'll say it now too. Teams that are towards the top need to win the winnable games. They can't pull off like a loss to a team that's towards the bottom. With that, St. Joe's and St. Louis, both of them have been struggling in conference play a little bit. I feel like when it comes to those two, we need to figure out ways to make sure that we can keep their star players from shooting like crazy and keeping their scoring down and trying to maximize what we can do with points off turnovers, as this UMass team is known for their defense and known for stealing the ball and going on fast break plays. So we kind of need to figure out how to play to our strong points and pull out the opposing team's weak points, really, is the best way is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and you talk about winnable games, and one of the games on that slate, I'm not going to definitely say it's a winnable game, but one of just the games on that slate upcoming is against George Mason. And Isaac, you talked about, you know, this Mason team being kind of an interesting member of the A-10 this year. 13-5 overall, 2-3 in Atlantic 10 play. They had a lot of changeover, in the offseason. I mean, anyone who's listening is well aware of that. Where do you think it's so tough to talk about a team like this because there were so many, just intangibles heading into the, like coming into this season. Where do you think they've been able to, kind of keep their heads above water a little bit? And where do you think they need to be, on that next step to get a win, against UMass coming up and, just be a quality team, throughout this conference slate?
With George Mason, I mean, they, like we said, they had a great start, first historic start in like almost 40 years. And, with Tony, what he's doing is an incredible job. He's rallied around his transfer portal guys. He's one of the few coaches that's like, you know what, I got the right pieces. And one thing I will say, if you guys remember his first press conference, he said that, this isn't a rebuilding. We're not rebuilding. And that really started to take credit from Kim English is just instituting that culture. And it's more about with Mason right now is like, all right, let's institute this culture. Let's institute a standard. VCU historically has always been about habit. And that's why they've always stayed consistent. It's always about culture. And the teams that do well or stay consistently winning those 20-plus games is culture. Dayton, St. Joe's, any of those types of teams that have, like, a strong basketball history. Sorry, UMass. It's been kind of inconsistent the last couple of years. But any of those teams that figured out what their culture is, what their identity is, what their strength is, they keep that strength going through. Now, with guarding the Mason the last couple games, their shooting's been really bad. At one point they shot against VCU. They went 0 for 15 from three. Can't do that. You can't do that in the A-10. If you're going to shoot, you better shoot with confidence and try to at least go close to 50% from three. Try to make at least under half. Big weaknesses that I've been noticing with them, especially going to play against UMass and St. Bonaventure tomorrow, front court's got to be ready. You can't just rely on Keyshawn to get your rebounding. And you can't rely on Keyshawn Woody and all your athletic guards to go get your rebounding. Everyone's got to contribute from the top five to the bottom three. Their front court's been showing that they're a little weak on rebounding. It showed against Richmond toward the end of the game because they lost only by two possessions. I mean, they clawed their way back. But I think that's what Mason really needs to focus on. Incredible job trying to rally those guys and Tony just kind of institute that culture. But, okay, you institute that culture. It showed what you guys can do successfully in non-conference. Now try to continue that over against, in conference. So hopefully they get it done against St. Bona, UMass, and everybody else in the conference, especially this weekend, because these are critical games that are coming up that will make or break whether they make the NIT or the NCAA tournament, because they have a great non-conference resume so far, beating Cornell. No really bad losses other than maybe VCU might be considered a bad loss so far. I don't think GW is a bad loss, and I don't think a quality good win is obviously Cornell, but just try to keep that consistency, try to shoot better and try to rebound better.
Yeah, and with culture, I feel like it's kind of become like one of the ultimate buzzwords, right? When there's a new coach at a program, it's like, we have to institute this culture. And sometimes coaches are really good at it, right? But then sometimes they just can't get what they're trying to do, or they're trying to, which, like what you're saying, Coach Skin is really doing well at, which I find to be really hard for a coach to try to do and succeed at, is not implementing your own new culture, but trying to uphold something that the previous coach or coaches have tried to implement that wasn't necessarily your own. And outside of just doing that yourself and being a leader to your players, after a while, you kind of want your players to be able to recite that back to you, both, verbally and with their on-court style. So even with the guys that, the turnaround on the player side that we've seen this year, are there any players that you feel like have really kind of emerged as leaders? Whether they were guys that stuck around from last year or guys that came out of the portal that have kind of been able to help Mason implement this really quickly?
I'll be honest, Ronald Polite, and he's a personal friend of mine. He's gone through three coaches. He's gone through he was one of the last Dave Paulson recruits. and he was a prize recruit when Dave Paulson got him because he was the first player from Oxon Hill since Lamar Butler to come to George Mason. Ronald Polite has grown. He's gone through a lot of injuries. And to go through three coaches and to now finally coming into your own, staying with Tony, because he could have went with Kim. He easily could have been in the Big East this year, backing up Devin Carter. That's not an issue. I think he can play at any conference in the country. But he finally has now come to his own with Tony and figured, like, say, hey, Tony's a Maryland guy, just like Kim. But Tony's from my neighborhood, specifically Montgomery County, PG County. Lamar's on the staff of my hero from my high school is on the staff as well. So I think Ronald has shown that he's just came into his own. And the stats may not show that in comparison, like Keyshawn and Woody and some of the other portal guys. But for me, the way he's been playing, like a true point guard and finally showing, other than last year, Kim kind of gave him that free reign. He's finally showing what he can actually fully capable of with the high octane offense and the scramp and high octane defense and the fast paced flow of the game. So he's one player, in my opinion, that has really stuck out for the Patriots.
I just quickly want to mention, too, since you just mentioned players for Mason to watch, Trey Wood, funny enough. It's a name we've heard before in the A-10, having been a UMass transfer to LIU to follow Kellogg down at LIU. But he stayed a year with McCall. He then ended up transferring down a year after. And a year after Kellogg got fired from LIU, he ended up transferring down to Mason. And honestly, Mason, with him going down to Mason, I feel like that's actually a good fit for Trey, just based off of his playing style and just from what I've seen of Mason so far this year. I feel like Trey Wood has definitely fit in very well with Tony Skin's plan to keep the culture and to keep the program where it was set when he got it and to get it even better. So that's just one thing I quickly wanted to mention was Trey Wood.
Great addition. I mean, Trey's looking amazing too. I just wish he was shooting better against Richmond. That's just the big thing from watching him play. He's a great addition and he's home. I think that's another big thing is Trey's home. So, that's a very big addition right there.
So heading into this weekend, Mason's taking on the Bonnies. And, you know, this is kind of a quote. If you listen to this pod a lot, this is kind of a quote that I've been really running into the ground lately. But I think it's really important because I think it really encapsulates, you know, winning at the A-10 and winning at the mid-major level in general. But Coach Smith, he said at A-10 Media Day, it's just hard to win in the Atlantic 10 just with guys that you have to recruit and you have to grow, right? So reaching into the portal and finding guys that fit your identity really quickly and can adapt to your system as quick as possible is a huge key, right? So coming off a big win against URI, how much are the Bonnies going to be testing Mason, both, you know, on the court and in terms of showing, you know, this vision that seems like both teams are really going for, which is just bringing guys in, getting them up to speed on what this team is about, and trying to win games out of it. What do you feel like you're going to see in this game?
Mason's going to have trouble. The Bonnies are scoring more points than Mason. Like, I wish it could be a little more simpler, a little more complex and a little more profound and a little more poetic, I can say it. But, I mean, they're averaging 78.5 points per game. That's more points than Mason's been doing the last 10 games. Mason's kind of dipped in their scoring. So I think St. Bonaventure is going to really test. All right, Tony Skin was known as a ball hawk, and his defense has shown as that he was a ball hawk, that he'll switch from a 1-3-1 or, like, he won't play what your scouting is looking like. So I just, based off what St. Bonaventure is looking like with how they've been playing defensively with, 6.6 seals and scoring, I want to see how they're adjust to Mason, because I have a weird feeling Mason's not going to follow the scout. They have not done it to a lot of the teams that they beat that look like a shock. Like, I guess for the instance, go back to the Expedition game. I was told from other coaches from West Virginia that when they scouted Mason, their initial scout of Mason didn't come up what came in the game. Like, Tony changed it day of. and it threw off a lot of teams. I can see Mason doing that based off the last couple outings and based off what Synergy is showing the St. Bonaventure coaches, based off the Richmond game. Like, okay, anticipate Mason's going to switch. They're going to switch their defensive strategy to start out in the game. So I think that's something that's going to be an interesting test to see, you know, hey, can they slow down St. Bonaventure? Because they had just got off a big win, and coming off of big highs. You know, they're playing well. They're traveling. You know, they probably got a little extra rest because of the snowstorms, because they got to probably fly in a little earlier. So that's kind of the big thing that I'm kind of interesting to see is like, all right, St. Bonaventure has been scoring a lot of points lately, but I want to see how Mason slows them down.
Yeah, shout out to all the, you know, traveling basketball teams and football teams and broadcast crews in that, you know, Western upstate New York area these past 2 weekends, because it's been rough. Yeah. Speaking of St. Bonaventure, you know, I'm glad that you brought that up about, you know, kind of keeping it simple with scouting St. Bonaventure, because, you know, I think people like, myself included, like to get into a lot of, you know, advanced metrics and KenPom and numbers, but it's like, if you're putting up, for example, 99 points in a game, like that's the simple answer, right? That's a scouting report. Don't let them score 99 points in a game. And I think that's probably what Rhodey's game plan is going to be against Dayton this weekend when they head over to play the Flyers in Archie Miller's return game that you mentioned, Sean, earlier. I just wanted to, you know, kind of get a vibe check on what's going on the Dayton campus. How are people feeling? I mean, I kind of know the answer, but I kind of want to hear it from a current Dayton student. What's kind of the general, you know, attitude around Archie right now on campus? Are people ready to give him a warm welcome, or will it be a pretty, you know, a pretty standard, you know, A-10 welcome this weekend?
I honestly think it's really interesting. I think I might have a little bit of a different perspective. I might have mentioned it earlier that I'm an Indy guy, so, you know, his whole time at Indiana changed my view on Archie more than my time here at Dayton, because, you know, from my perspective, I can see what he did for the program, you know, a number of years ago, and that 2014 run with Scucci and just that whole squad. And then, you know, left and is now back in the A-10. You know, I think that there is a lot of hate, and there's been a ton of stuff on Twitter on, like, are we booing, are we applauding, you know, what's kind of the vibe. And I think that a great, I want to say that it was David Jablonski who writes for the Dayton Daily. I want to say that it was him, could be someone else. But they tweeted that they're like, we should applaud Archie for what he did for the program, and then give Coach Grant and the current Flyers a way bigger applaud and standing ovation for what they're doing right now, which I thought that's a really cool way to go about it, and recognize Archie did good things for our program and took a bigger, at the time, bigger and better position. And I don't think that, personally, I can't blame him for doing that. You know, there's some people that would definitely be lucky to have an A-10 head coaching job for a long time, and that's, you know, a high level to be coaching at in college basketball. But yeah, I think that, you know, he took that position and now is back at the A-10 level, and there's a lot of people that kind of want to, like, show him what he missed out on or whatever. But I mean, to be honest, if he wouldn't have left, we wouldn't be in the position that we're in now. You know, our think that our team and where we're at as a you know, school, and that whole thing of, like, set the tone as a coach and all of that, it would look much different. So yeah, so I'm honestly interested to see what it's going to look like tomorrow. I will be in the student section, so I'm not even sure what I'm, you know, my response yet. I'm sure that that'll get nailed down in the student section, you know, a little bit before the game. But I mean, to give you a view of kind of the vibe around the game, our student section, all of the student section tickets sold out in about 30 minutes. So that's like 2,000 or 3,000, probably like 2,000, I think, is what they get. 1,000 to 2,000 tickets sold out like 30 to 40 minutes on Thursday. So And this is a game against Rhode Island, who in conference, you know, picked up some wins. I believe 3-1 right now in conference. But as far as like the rankings, you know, KenPom rankings and in the net and everything, a very low ranked team. So the hype is definitely there. I think it helps Dayton is on this big win streak. And yeah, I think that the big thing, if I was a team like Rhode Island, is just shut down Daron Holmes at all costs. A few weeks ago, I know I mentioned on the last pod, but I mean, a few weeks ago, I wouldn't have worried about him too much. I mean, he was putting together some strong games, but nothing too ridiculous. But over the past two games, he's averaging like 29 points and 11 or 12 rebounds. Last game, I believe he had 4 blocks for the Flyers. So he's definitely turning it up into that All-American, you know, like Naismith watch list, like all of those accolades that he's been kind of in the top 50, top 25 for the last year or two. He's been turning in those performances, and I mean, he's been hot. So I think that that will be very interesting, what they do with Daron Holmes, how they guard him, how they treat that, and then who steps up for Dayton, because that's, I think, a big thing for us right now is our depth, with Brea leading the NCAA in three-point percentage off the bench. Right now he's dipped down a little bit to 48%, but when you're in a shooting slump, not a slump, but when you don't have your best night and you're still averaging 48% from outside, that's pretty wild. Santos as my favorite pickup as far as newcomers, transferred from Pitt, wasn't cracking the lineup over there, and has come in and been a serious guy in our rotation. So I think that it'll be very important to see who steps up and if Daron can dominate, how they plan around that. But I think it's going to be another scrappy game, closer than I'd like it to be. I totally agree with what Isaac said earlier. You know, I love the whole like Dayton versus the world sort of thing. It's super fun, but at the same time, you know, I don't think we're going to go, you know, 18-0 or anything like that in conference. And especially when we get to the conference tournament, it's like, all it takes is one game. And you know, most likely Dayton's going to be in the tournament, hopefully, kind of regardless on how they do in that A-10 tourney. So, I mean, if it was semifinals or finals and, you know, a team has a great game, they're going to find themselves in March. I think that's a big thing right now. It's like, we're still in January. We've got a long ways to go. So I think for the Flyers fans and players, it's like, you know, I think we're getting to the point where it's kind of like, all right, let's start planning for like seeding. And for me personally, I think we need to, I mean, we got a game tomorrow. Like, let's worry about that before we worry about we're a 3 seed or a 4 seed. Because if we start dropping some of these, then, you know, seeding is not going to be our biggest issue.
I know with former coaches coming back to their building, like when Shaka goes back to VCU or when Anthony Grant comes back to VCU, there isn't like a lot of animosity. Like, even same with George Mason, with Kim, like I know a lot of the Mason faithful, and as crazy and as weird as their fan base is, being from, born and raised in Fairfax, they're cheering for Kim's success. They want to see Kim succeed. I know it's been a while since Archie left for Indiana. What do you think overall, like, the tone and messaging is to where, like, based off of Archie's tenure? I don't believe, from my opinion, because I have a friend that played for Archie as a walk-on, Joey Gruden. From my opinion, it didn't seem very negative when he left. He's like, hey, you know, he just took a bigger job. But is there a lot of, like, vitriol to it? Like, if he comes back, it's like, oh, no, we're booing this dude, or anything like that, coming to that? Like, is there any negative feeling since he left?
I mean, I think that there is, but I think it's coming from the people that don't know. I think it might not be coming. I think that some of that stuff isn't representative of the whole fan base. And I think some of the most loyal fans, people that really know those Archie years, what he did for the program. I know I saw a ton of tweets that, you know, we're very praising of Archie for throwing us back on the map as a top 25 team, and, you know, taking us on those tournament runs. And so I think that there is some of that stuff coming from certain groups, certain people. But I think the people that saw what Archie did, and how he left. I mean, took us on the deepest run Dayton's been on in I don't know how long. And, you know, if a top program, you know, IU's been on a down trend a little bit, you know, kind of since he left IU and had his time at IU. But when he took that job, I mean, IU was a huge promising, you know, place to go to. You know, I think.
I know IU fans were glad to see him go. And I
yes.
know there's a lot of negativity from Archie's tenure at IU. I know that for a fact. Like, IU, well, he's like, no, we're going to boo this man if we ever see him in Bloomington ever again. So I know that for a fact. But it's interesting
yes.
perspective about Dayton, where Dayton's like, well, he did a lot for the program. So.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think if Archie were to come in now, where the program's already hot, we're already at that top 25 level, make a run or two, and then take a job at Indiana or something like that, I think that there would be way more animosity, a lot more like, what's this guy doing? You know, all of that stuff, booing and everything. But I think that the people that experienced Dayton before and then are experiencing it after, I think that they can see and appreciate, I think they should at least be able to see and appreciate, you know, where he took the program in his stint, and that we're able to have the program that we've been able to hold the last, you know, during the Anthony Grant time because of the work that he was doing. So, you know, personally, I don't have any animosity. I have way more about him at Indiana than him at Dayton. And so I think that hopefully it's like a good welcome and kind of a full circle thing, and then it's game time, and hopefully Dayton will take care of that on the court and not necessarily off the court.
I can just tell you from having experienced a coach coming back and playing against UMass with Travis coming back to from like with St. Louis after he left UMass to go to Oklahoma State, initially wasn't gonna leave UMass to go. I believe his first offer was to Providence, but Travis then turned down that offer. I don't remember who the first offer was from, as UMass offered him more money, but then Oklahoma State came in and offered him almost like a wicked big salary. I can't remember what the salary was. And Travis is like, yeah, no, I'm leaving because of the salary. Like, I can get much more money. You guys can't offer that here. See ya. And this was after UMass had finally started to get back into that vibe of almost, not exactly the like Final Four team, but back into the 1990s vibe. I can tell you when he first was his first return game to UMass when he started at St. Louis, when he stepped out of wherever he was, you could hear from the first moment he walked into the actual arena part itself, someone was booing. During the game, people were screaming, Travis, like literally screaming at Travis the entire game. That is like, now it doesn't happen as much because I think UMass fans have accepted it, but it depends on the fan base. And I'm actually very intrigued to see how the Dayton fan base is going to really react to Archie going back into UD Arena for the first time, but not wearing the Dayton blue instead of wearing the Rhodey blue. So just going to be intriguing to see how a fan base reacts, because you can never predict how a fan base really reacts to anything.
Yeah, that's a great point. And also sometimes, you know, again, keeping it simple, it's as fun as it is to cheer on your team, it's also fun to boo, right? And if you have a bit more of a, if you have a bit more of a concrete reason to boo instead of them just being the other guy, then I can understand why certain fan bases, you know, want to, you know, kind of get going like that. Sean, you had something?
Yeah, no, I think it's honestly kind of risky to like boo in a way. I mean, like, it's how wild would it be if we booed Archie Miller and then he whooped us on our home court? Like, he wins that. I mean, we dropped a game to Rhode Island last year. You know, we lost to him on the road. And granted, whole different situation, very different teams. We were playing on the road later in the season. Now he's coming to us. But yeah, I mean, what does that say about you as a fan base? You boo a coach, took you on this great run, really improved the program, recruiting, you know, the whole nine yards. And And then, you know, he comes back, booed the crap out of him, and, you know, then he beats you on your home court, hands you your first conference loss, snaps the streak. I mean, that the papers, the press would be all over that for Dayton. So, you know, in that sense, I really hope that there isn't booing. And then, you know, if Dayton wins, whatever happens, you know, people can say what they want after the game, you know, is over and done with. But yeah, I think that that's a potential really big story, is if he gets a rude arrival to UD Arena, and then Rhodey wins. I mean, they've been hot, and, you know, this conference is anybody's game. So I think that would be very, very interesting.
Yeah, that's going to be a great pregame to watch. That so Rhodey at Dayton is going to be on Saturday at 12:30. It's the second earliest game of the Saturday men's slate. Obviously, that first game is going to be George Washington at UMass. And we're going to get into, you know, our top games for the weekend in a second. But I want to highlight one game on the Saturday men's slate that I think is really important, because it is featuring our other undefeated team in conference play, and that is the 4-0 Richmond Spiders as they head down to North Carolina to take on Davidson. So, obviously, you know, this is a conference where, you know, from year to year, experience frequently wins, right? You got Chris Mooney. He's one of the longest tenured coaches in the conference. What about this Richmond team that you guys have watched this year has kind of allowed them to get off to this start? And it seems like, I don't know, in the years that I've been watching the A-10, they kind of really excel when the expectations aren't really, like, when they're not really under as much of a spotlight. And I feel like that this year is kind of one of those years. Where do you see this Richmond team going?
They might pull it off and squeak a tournament run. I don't know. Chris Moon, I mean, let's if you guys know your basketball history, like, not too long, maybe last 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, Chris Mooney was on the hot seat. I think he's finally figured out. He's like, okay, I can get certain guys in here. Shout out to Grant Golden saving his job. Let's be honest. Good player. I've played against him in high school throughout my entire basketball career. Grant and, you know, and everybody, Blake Francis, all those guys, you know, they finally figured it out. And when he finally figured it out and, you know, gutted his way into an A-10 tournament championship, you know, he found a way to keep it sticking. Like, all right, this is what's going to work. And, you know, it's impressive to see how they're playing without Tyler Burton, because Tyler Burton was one of the top transfers in the portal. He's playing excellent. He's playing somewhat excellent at Villanova. I mean, he's looked like the lead guy. So you think losing guys like that and other guys' graduation, they wouldn't look as good. But Richmond, I think, has figured out their system and has figured out what they can do best. Offensively, I think they're playing amazing, especially with their front court. Their front court looks good. They look poised. They look, you know, consistent. They look concise. They don't look like they're going to get rattled. And I think them going to North Carolina is going to show, like, you know, Davidson's a hard place to play at. You know, with their fan base and, you know, with their basketball history and, you know, with their coaching and their teams, a lot of good skill guys, very hard place to play. But I think Richmond has shown that, saying, hey, we're not going to be rattled by anybody. They're playing very mature. And I think that's the rough end, is that, hey, mature basketball wins. And that's not just transport experience. That's just like, hey, we know our strengths and we're going to play to them.
Yeah. And hanging around, especially against really good teams, is so important for Richmond, right? I don't know if you got a chance to watch a game. I think the perfect example of that is the game they played against Colorado really early in the year. They only lost by 5 points, but obviously Colorado's, they've kind of dipped a little bit, I would say, you know, compared to where they were in November and December. But I mean, they were keeping up with a Pac-12 program. So you mentioned Mooney being in the hot seat 5 years ago. I wouldn't say it was that long ago. You know, I think that, I mean, I'm sure it gets shared around a lot on like A10 Twitter. I don't know when exactly it was from, but that Fire Mooney billboard, right? That gets shared all the time. It gets edited when they do well to extend Mooney. So, I mean, I just think that comes with being, you know, a long tenured coach. I mean, you're going to be, you know, it's going to be hot and cold a lot. So, yeah, really exciting it's always fun when Richmond's in the mix. But let's kind of finish off the men's side of things with, we really ran through a lot of that slate. So, and there are no games on Sunday or Monday on the men's side. And we got Friday 10 going on as we speak. VCU is up 21 against St. Louis with the under four timeout. They're up 70 to 49 here. What other games this weekend are you guys looking forward to? I know I'm going to be at Fordham Loyola Chicago. That's going to be really interesting. But anything that really catches your guys' eye here, and we could even go into Tuesday if there's something that you think is also worth watching that as well.
For me personally, I'm going to obviously be at this game, but UMass versus George Washington. And this game really, really is like one of my big games to watch this weekend, as UMass is honoring the legacy of Jack Lehman, who was one of our best coaches in UMass history, was actually one of the winningest coaches in UMass history. So the fact that we are continuing this as an annual tradition to honor Jack Lehman, who passed away tragically while with the team, traveling back as a radio broadcaster from the season finale down in Richmond. The fact that they still do this every year just shows that he really is UMass athletics through and through. And honestly, I feel like this is probably one of the better teams to do this with too, knowing the fact that George Washington, George Washington didn't necessarily play him as much, like against Lehman as much. It kind of gives a little bit of like a rival, like not necessarily rivalry, but it gives a good game for it. It's going to be not like a blowout win. It's going to be at least a competitive game. And well, George Washington has a good history of having games either come down to the wire so far in conference play or go into overtime. So honestly, this is a great game to watch this weekend just because of competitiveness, and also seeing if Cross will make his return, honestly. So just the fact that we're honoring Jack Lehman this weekend, I feel is a great thing that UMass has done a great job with every single year ever since Lehman's passing.
Yeah, that's a great reason to watch as well.
That was a tough one to follow. That was like a heartfelt, you should watch this. Mine is two of the bottom teams in the A-10. If you really want to get a dirty matchup here, St. Joe's Duquesne is on Saturday. And I think this is honestly so interesting because really struggling in conference, St. Joe's 1-3, Duquesne 0-4, the only winless team. But if you go back to before conference play started, Duquesne was sitting at 9-3. St. Joe's, currently at 11-6, would be at 10-3. Both teams, I feel like, entered conference play at a very good spot for their programs. And I would say that they were probably feeling pretty confident to be, you know, at least contending midfield teams in there with a whole bunch of sneaky teams that can win or lose on any night. But obviously, I'm sure a frustrating stretch for either side. So I think it would be very interesting. I mentioned this earlier. Dayton was not the favorite when we went to Duquesne. Duquesne, the 1-point favorite. Dayton won that game by 10. But nonetheless, I mean, the voting had Duquesne, you know, winning that one. And St. Joe's is a team that, I mean, has some pretty, like, solid wins. I know that, Isaac, you mentioned the Princeton win earlier in the pod. Villanova earlier in the non-conference. I mean, some seriously high level wins and high level play. So I think that one's going to be really interesting for me. St. Joe's is the 5.5-point favorite on that one. So not projected to be too close, I guess. But I think those are two teams with a skill level much higher than what their conference ranking is. And I think that they're probably eager to pick it up, get some wins under their belt, and improve their conference standing, because they can clearly play at a much higher level.
And speaking of get right games, this is really important for both teams, right? Like we've all said, these are two teams that their talent level is way higher than what their conference record shows. That being said, you know, you can only justify your record. You can only excuse your record with your talent level, you know, on paper for so long. So I'm looking at kind of more looking at Duquesne here than at St. Joe's here, because, you know, they are 0-4, but you fall to 0-5 in conference play. You know, the best you can end up being, I mean, you could still end up being a 13-win team, but it gets harder and harder to dig yourself out of that hole every loss. So for Duquesne, and even for St. Joe's as well, I mean, once you get to a 1-4, 0-5 start, how does your season kind of shift there? What does the focus then become for you guys? Is it trying to, you know, obviously it's still trying to win every game ahead of you, but how do you kind of refocus yourself coming out of a, you know, a stretch like that?
One game at a time. You know, the old Jimmy B say, like, just one game at a time and stop by stop, you know. So I don't want to see any team fall that down, especially Duquesne, because they've invested a lot in their men's basketball program the last couple years. They've done
the right things. They've built new facilities. They've done everything they can possibly do to try to, you know, be back to where, like, you know, Duquesne was a respectable program. But in my opinion, you don't want to see any team to fall that way. So hopefully, you know, if that happens, you just got to take game by game. That's literally it. That there's nothing else you can really say about that. I mean, and that comes down even to adding to me, even my team, George Mason. If they lose this game, they're 2-4. And not starting off great in conference. You know, teams like that, there's a lot of mental games right here. Like, all right, this is make or break. Not saying like it's, you know, it's all and ends all, but it's a good start to where you finish off in the second half of the season. Because once again, the A-10 is a very unique conference, 15 teams. So you get to only play certain teams once. And some of those games that you only play games once are statement, could be potential statement wins or non-statement wins for the resume. So, you know, you got to really, you know, take care of those games and handle those games right way when you get them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's going to wrap up the men's side of our podcast. But I want to get into the women's side of things, because there's also some really good stuff going on there. Again, you know, it's I really like when we get to talk about one school on both sides of the A-10 here. And that's why I want to get into Richmond. You know, 6-0 Spiders on top of the conference, right ahead of St. Joe's, VCU, and George Mason, who are 5-1, 4-1, and 4-1, respectively. So, KG, are you shocked that Richmond is pulling off this start? And is anybody from this next tier kind of got a good shot of taking them down?
So if I'm going to be completely honest with you, when I filled out my preseason power rankings, I believe I had Richmond in like the top 6, top 8. I don't remember the exact spot, but I was not expecting Richmond to be surging this much in conference play. I was more expecting before we even had the season start, everything. I was more expecting Rhode Island and St. Louis to be extremely strong. And while St. Louis kind of shot themselves in the foot pretty good come non-conference play, unfortunately, lacking confidence and only having really a statement win over Missouri. But other than that, St. Louis is starting to possibly piece stuff together. But really, George Mason has amazed me so much on this woman's side. Daniel Frank, who's one of our other writers, could tell you that when I started really watching A-10 women's basketball, Rhode Island was having winless conference play. That is, we're now 3 years removed from that with the Vanessa Blair Lewis now. And the fact that she's turned the program around this much and this well is just amazed me. And I feel VCU's always been up towards the top of the A-10, and they just had a fluke year-wise with that. And St. Joe's, too, has always been up there, and sometimes they'll have an occasional fluke or there's always people contending right there with them. So, honestly, George Mason has amazed me the most out of all of the teams, really, with how well they've done this year.
Obviously, I'm from here. I'm from Fairfax, and for those who don't know, like, Northern Virginia – despite George Mason's history which unfortunately I've been to a lot of the women's games. It's very abysmal. It's like their women's program has gone through, I hate to say it, hell. Like, in my opinion, they've only had a couple of winning seasons, a couple of players here and there. And it doesn't reflect, which is unfortunate, how rich Northern Virginia basketball, and I'm not just talking about the DMV. Yes, DMV basketball as a whole for women's basketball is cream of the creme, like cream of the crop. But just even in Northern Virginia alone, especially in Fairfax County, George Mason, like, they've never been able to reflect, like, oh my gosh, we've had Jasmine Thomas, who just retired, born and raised in Fairfax, like right near GMU. Several other players I can list off in the WNBA. The head coach of UVA is from Fairfax. When it comes to women's basketball, like, Fairfax County, like, individually always had had an historic feat to it. Kara Lawson, the name, the list can go on and on. So, and George and Nate Mason, for some reason, have never been able to capitalize recruiting that talent and making them stay at home, saying, hey, stay at home. Or trying to get all the kids from Prince George's County, stay at home, and let's build something. So Coach Lewis, who's from the area, has figured out, she's like, ah, I can recruit. I can keep the kids from Baltimore from leaving, keep the kids in Northern Virginia leaving, keep the kid, and I add some other additional pieces, and it's finally showing, and it's nice. It's nice. There's a lot of emotion for that because I knew some of the former head coaches from Mason. I grew up with one of them, Coach Tannehill, and some of the players used to babysit me. So some of the women's players used to babysit me, so it's with Mason, men start great, but the women, you know, I think they can win the conference. And I hate to say it from a fan perspective and try to keep it, like, you know, unbiased. Obviously, Richmond is doing amazing. I think Mason, and what Daniel even wrote the other day, Mason can really steal at-large bid because their resume is just looking amazing. I just don't see how you not keep them in the tournament.
You touched on it perfectly, and I'll just say this. We just had the most recent women's bracketology come out. Richmond's listed as our automatic qualifier, but we have not one but two teams actually in the next four out, one of them actually being, funny enough, George Mason, and the other one being St. Joe. So the fact that the Patriots have rebounded so well from that and actually have gone to their Northern Virginia roots, that really surprises me, and they keep having accolades build up on this team. And the Sonya Smith, Kennedy Harris, and Taylor Jamison really just leading the way with how well they're doing. It's just really helped out the team greatly. And honestly, this Mason team could be a very sneaky team to upset Richmond. And honestly, Richmond could go for a time where they could have like a, oh, we forgot about Mason coming up. And I believe they don't play them until February. So it's just going to be a very interesting one. Yeah, they don't play until Saturday, February 24th. So that is a long ways away. And you never know what can happen between now and then when in conference play, especially on this women's side this year.
And I'm glad you brought up the local recruiting as well, because that is so huge for a mid-major school. It's huge for anybody. But I feel like, you know, in this day and age, I mean, I really don't have, you know, not to get into a whole like thing about transfer portal and all that stuff. Like, I think a lot of the changes that we've seen in college basketball are great. But one thing that's really hard, as you know, just the teams at the top get larger and larger, is that it's hard for, you know, hometown heroes to really kind of stay in their area unless it's like a Power Five, Power Six program. So being able to establish those roots for a program like Mason is great, because it obviously gets good talent, you know, from the area. And it also puts butts in seats, right? I mean, people are going to want to watch players that, you know, they went to high school with, or, you know, they're from the same town, from the same neighborhood. Like, that is so huge. Like, I mean, the example that I always bring up is when Scoochie Smith was at Dayton. I mean, when Dayton would come to Rose Hill Gym, and, you know, this is even true for Dayton now with Malachi, right? You know, when they come, they draw huge crowds, and that's exactly what schools should want to do.
To add to that point, just to start to be a little fanboy about Mason, you brought up the point with Dayton. Mason hasn't even recruited; is not even one of the best schools that in the whole region of the DC area, for all the DC area, the D1 schools.
they haven't recruited that well in locally. Not even just historically, but even recently with this recent team. And that's just saying enough for, I know most of you guys probably don't even follow national high school basketball ranking. Paul the Six, Sidwell Friends, and these names sound familiar. Paul the Six, Sidwell Friends, and I can think of maybe a couple other public schools historically, especially Paul the Six, because they're nationally ranked, and Bishop McInerney. None have players that are committed to Mason. And Mason has missed out on players like Azizi Fudd, Ozzie Fudd, like top-ranked players and their bench teammates, Brianna Scott at Georgetown. They've missed out on Anthony Cowan's sister, Alex Cowan. They've missed out on a lot of local talent that are now playing in the Big East and their teammates that are now like at other small Division I schools. It's like, we don't want to go to Mason. So the fact that this Mason roster doesn't have any of those, only a couple of those players maybe from the Baltimore area and PG area, and they're playing the way they are playing right now is impressive. So that's just shout out to Coach Blair Lewis. So, yeah.
Yeah, and all it takes sometimes is one or two players, right? Where it's like, okay, if you can beat out a higher ranked school on one or two recruits a year, that is huge stepping stones. Going into this weekend, we got a really good slate. Mason is taking on UMass. They're taking on your team, KG. So what are you looking for in this game from a UMass side of things?
So from the UMass side of things for Mason, I've already done this math out because I was very curious on the point margin. Mason's only has one loss in conference play, and it was a 2-point loss to Rhodey. They are 4-1 in conference play, and all their wins in conference play come by at least 26 points or more. Highest win margin is 37 points against LaSalle in the conference opener, from having done my math out for that correctly. But as for UMass needs to stay consistent. They need to rebound. They can't go on scoring droughts against this Mason team, because if they go on scoring droughts, they're going to find themselves in a big deficit. And I'm not putting a number on that deficit just because I know it could be a 30 or 40 point deficit, but UMass needs to find ways to hold Sonya Smith like down to limited points, as well as holding some of their other players like Kennedy Harris and Taylor Jamison as well, too. So I feel that just trying to keep the players who score the most for Mason at bay is going to be a huge key. But UMass also needs to find ways to score. And UMass has been a team that struggles to score both offensively and defensively, just based off the statistics alone that go with UMass. Stephanie Kalasia basically carries the team in points per game and also in rebounds. So basically in two of the top categories, it's Stephanie taking over. But Alexia Rose has done a lot to help out this Minute Woman team. Just in conference play alone, she's been averaging almost double digits. But factoring in non-conference play, she's almost at double digits, so 9.6 points per game. I feel that just as a whole for the team, like UMass needs to limit turnovers, not let the ball get stolen while they're passing, and also to minimize just really like the key factors. And it's just playing better transition defense, not getting in your brain mentally and all of that. It's just because this team is 3-15. They're better than the record, especially if they were able to be like extremely close with Richmond, down at Richmond on field trip day. Mason can't just go in and say, oh, this is going to be a 40-point win. We got this. Like, that's the thing, is you can't go into any lower team like this and just go, oh, yeah, this is a 40-point blowout win. We can win this. UMass is going to put up a fight right away. I'm going to try to shut down Sonya Smith and Kennedy Harris and Taylor Jamison pretty quick. And if they shut down all three of those, or at least two of them, Mason could find themselves in a little bit of trouble if UMass can find people to score, like Chinyere Odenebo, even Lily Taule. Any of them could really be very helpful with this, especially Kristen Williams, if she can get like hot from behind the arc. So UMass just needs to find the open shooters and keep shooting that ball, even if it's not going in.
So we got seven games in total on the women's side this weekend. 14 out of 15 teams are in action. The only team that's not playing this weekend is Fordham. So we got four games on Saturday, three on Sunday. What's piquing your guys' interest here? What are you watching this weekend?
I just first want to go in depth a little bit about this Rhodey St. Joe's game. This game is probably like two of our top contending teams in the conference. Rhodey just beat Fordham on, I believe, Wednesday. So they just broke a two-game losing skid against Loyola Chicago and Richmond against the Rams. Funny enough, in our Ram v. Ram tournament for conference play, because we love the Rams in the Atlantic 10. What can I say? Every team should just be the Rams. It just would be life easier. But Rhodey lost to both Loyola Chicago and Richmond. Pretty close games. Rhodey's number 80 in the net. Rhodey, as far as looking back, like comparing it from last year, Rhodey only lost seven games in the entirety of their season last year, and only lost two conference games last year. One to UMass and one to Fordham last year. So far, they beat both of those. Or they have not played UMass yet. I apologize. But Rhodey has beaten Fordham so far in that. But Rhodey is also dealing with a little bit of a possibility of not having Anel Dutat for this game. So Anel Dutat could be a game-time decision for eligibility due to some NCAA compliance issues. She is eligible again after Rhode Island fixed it very quickly due to having not reported some grades from having taken a gap year between high school and going into the pros playing as an amateur. So she's just they're just trying to make sure everything's taken care of, but the NCAA will have to come out with a ruling for that, so she could miss more time. I don't know if it's going to necessarily impact her against St. Joe's, but the St. Joe's team has only one loss to Richmond. Funny enough, both teams have lost to Richmond, which is already insane, the fact that Richmond's played most of the top of the conference. But St. Joe's is also in the next four out. St. Joe's really doesn't seem that they've lost momentum from their non-conference play. Their only loss in non-conference coming to Utah. And honestly, this St. Joe's team seems like they are a lot stronger than they were this time last year. And could definitely be putting out a big run in the conference tournament against Richmond, even against Rhode Island, if they meet up again in the tournament. So, comparing wise in the net, St. Joe's is number 61 in the net and Rhodey is number 80. I feel that this game, since it's a nationally televised game, I believe this game is actually on ESPNU at noontime. So all three of our games on Sunday are actually nationally televised games, funny enough, with UMass being the second part of our doubleheader on CBS Sportsnet, with the first one being Duquesne versus Davidson. I feel Duquesne could possibly beat Davidson. It just depends. Davidson is without Susie Rose Deegan due to a season-ending ACL tear, and then they're also without Sylvie Jackson. I don't know the extent of her knee injury, but I know she went down with a knee injury against Mason. And it's also going to be interesting to see how the Richmond Spiders can handle Dayton, because Richmond's had a few close games with some of the teams towards the bottom of the pack, which has concerned me a little bit, but they somehow seem to pull off those wins, especially since it's a Saturday game. I feel like it's anyone's game, honestly, because in conference play, we always tend to wreak havoc on ourselves on the women's side, which ultimately loses us from being a possible two-bid league to down to a one-bid league. Unfortunately, that's just been the bias of the selection committee, but this weekend slate's just wicked stack.
Yeah, I think, not to just talk about the school I represent, but I am excited to see Dayton play Richmond. I mean, we've got the number one seed, right now in the conference, and I think it'll be really interesting. This is a Dayton team that's working its way back from, losing a coach, losing some players, 2 years ago, was very bottom of the table last season, and right now 2-4 in conference, just kind of put a beat down on George Washington in our last game, which was very, very cool to see. And George Washington, another, bottom third team, I think, in the conference. But still, I thought it was cool. I think a team that's viewed as an equal right now, for us to go in and win like that was a bit of a statement game for the Flyers right now, where we're at. I definitely am not going to call for any upsets or something, Dayton over Richmond, taking down the one and or anything. I don't think that we're at that level. I mean, you never know. A10, crazier things have happened for sure. I think that it'll be a great game to kind of test at the A10 level how far Dayton can push and contend with one of the top teams, whether it be UMass or Richmond or St. Joe's. Yeah, I think that's what is definitely exciting me. Is just to see how close can we get. We're trying to return to the top third of the table where we were for a number of years, just a few years ago. And for a program that's just, basically restarted itself in the last 2 years, I think that just trying to win any of these games, upsetting a top seed, is a statement win kind of each time. So I think that one for sure is exciting me. It's also the last game on Saturday. It's 6 o'clock, so there's no other A10 games right around it. So hopefully we'll get a lot of viewership as well with playing the top seed, being the late Saturday game. Hopefully Dayton will get a little bit more looks on the women's side, because I think they definitely deserve it, and the men's team is definitely getting that right now. So hopefully both sides will end up getting some love on Saturday.
I guess to add on to the Dayton Richmond game, that game could be very a sneaky game. Like realistically, 6-0 in conference. Now we're starting to get into the second half. Starting getting at the beginning, we'll see what you're really made of. Because it when you're playing against a team that doesn't really have anything to lose, anything can go. Anything can go. So I'm curious to see how Dayton's going to play, because Dayton really doesn't have anything to. They have everything to gain morally from this game, but they have nothing to lose either if they lose this game. So Dayton against Richmond, very, 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 very sneaky. And then also Davidson, given their record, 13-4, only going just 500 in conference. Once again, showing how deep and how the top half of the women's side of the conference is looking. Those are two games that bring my eye. Obviously, Mason already played on Wednesday and showed their dominance, and they're going to play UMass on Sunday, which is another sneaky game. But a lot of the games that you got, like KG and Sean just mentioned, those are their ones. But definitely Dayton and Richmond should be the one to be concerned about, because Dayton's got nothing to lose.
Yeah, I think like as a Dayton fan, I think that's what's so exciting about the women's program is like last year we were kind of at rock bottom. That was a rough year as a team, especially coming off of the success that they had had a few years prior. So I think that's what makes it so cool, especially with how our men's team, it's like they got everything to lose. They've been at the top the last year or two, projected to win, projected these March Madness runs, and now the women's team is kind of on the flip side where it's like any win's a good win. Any win where we're projected to lose, we're trying to prove that we can come back and return to where we were. So I think that's something that is really cool, and we don't get that on the men's side, because everyone's kind of like preying on the Dayton downfall, and it's a little bit different on the women's side where it's like, we're just going to try and come play, pull some upsets, and I think we are a sneaky team. Ivy Wolf, shout out Ivy Wolf, just hit 1,000 points. So that was an awesome thing to see in that George Washington game. But yeah, I mean, trying to be on the way back, made progress from last year to this year. So I think that it'll be cool to see the progress that they make just from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. And I'd love to see them just one or two games if they pulled off an upset against George Mason or Richmond St. Joe's, one of the top teams. I think that'll be a huge booster for the team. To be able to see, our record might not reflect it, but we can still play at a top of the table level, and a team that could do some damage in the conference tournament. I think that would be really big.
Yeah, and Sean and Isaac basically nailed the points pretty much down hard on the women's side. I mean, another person who just hit their 1,000 point too, actually funny enough, is on Richmond, who Dayton's going against on Sunday against Rhodey. Grace Towson nailed her 1,000 point from the free throw line, funny enough. So the fact that two recent 1,000-point scorers are actually going up against each other is pretty cool. But honestly, this A-10 women's slate couldn't be packed any more down than it is this weekend. So it should be a good showing on the women's side, as well as it is on the men's side.
Yeah, and it's always a great showing here on the A-10 Talk podcast. So I think that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Make sure you keep watching A-10 basketball. Make sure you keep watching A-10 women's basketball. Keep following us at A-10 Talk, A-10Talk.com. And for KG, Sean Vitalis, Isaac Harris, I'm Sam Basil, and we'll see you guys next time.